Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friend's music record shop. Go visit him down at 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. They got new records coming in every Friday. This Friday, records from The Offspring, Neil Young, Jeff Lynne of ELO, Panda Bear, new One Direction record, all kinds of other stuff. So, also, they do a lot of in-stores and things on Saturdays and Sundays. This Saturday, November 14th, Turntable Takeover with Devise. So they'll be hanging out, playing all their favorite records. There'll be Four Hands Brewery sponsored, so there'll be some beer to give away. So come out November 14th for that. Also, mark the calendar for November 28th, next Rock Paper Podcast showcase with Hands and Feet and Connor Lau. Visit them online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
Hey, this is Devin Allman, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says.
Whenever you want me, I'll be there. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. I'll be around. Whenever you call me, I'll be there. Whenever you want me, I'll be there. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. I'll be around. Whenever you call me, I'll be there. Whenever you want me, I'll be there. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. I'll be around. Whenever you call me, I'll be there. Whenever you want me, I'll be there. Whenever you need me, I'll be there. I'll be around.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from Rose Music Hall in Columbia, Missouri.
Yes.
Hanging out with Devin Allman. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and I know we've been trying to do this for a while,
yeah.
So I'm glad the schedule synced up, and
yeah,
it's a pleasure to be doing it. Thank you.
I'm very excited about this. I haven't actually been up here to... last time I was here, it was Mojo's, and...
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was the last time I was up here, but I saw Rival Sons here.
Oh, cool.
And they kicked ass, man. They're one of my favorites. So I think that might have been the last time I was up here. And Driving Wheel, who was playing with To You Tonight, they opened that show also. And
cool.
So, yeah, it's been a bit, but I've been over at Blue Note, and it's over at another little bar. Watched my friends jam a little while ago. And
yeah.
But, yeah, it's always fun to run up here every now and then and catch some good shows.
Yeah. Columbia's a good town,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So, so Devin's got a show Friday, the November 13th at Ameristar in the Bottleneck Blues Bar.
Yes, sir.
Part of your Friday Night Blues series.
Yep.
So, I was going to ask about that. Like, you know, you've been that's been going on a couple months now, or whatever. Six months or something.
Yeah, we're over halfway through the it was a year long campaign we're doing, and I guess it started April this year, and it's been awesome.
Yeah.
It's really taken off.
I love it, man, especially for a guy who, you know, living in St. Charles County. A lot of great blues coming to my neighborhood, and and you're bringing in, or, you know, I don't know how much say you have in it, but like a lot of my favorites are coming around. There was More Than an Arbuckle played.
Yep.
Samantha Fish and stuff. It's just fun to see some of my, like, you know, they're not, you know, household names quite yet, but they're great bands, and it's fun to that they're getting an opportunity to play in St. Charles. So.
Yeah, I mean, the idea behind it was, you know, I've been living in St. Louis, St. Charles for quite a long time, and you know, I come up in that scene. And then I go and tour the world and play festivals and make friends with artists and, you know, have friends that are on the same record label or the same booking agent or whatever. And I thought, man, it would be so cool, you know, to have a place for them to call home in St. Louis, you know, and in the St. Louis area, you know. And I really do hope that the blues that's going on in St. Charles is bringing people from St. Louis and from over east side in Illinois. Mm-hmm. To support, you know, we've got Tab Benoit coming up, which is going to be an amazing show.
Right.
I'm playing there this Friday. You know, it's really been a cool place for my national friends like Tab Benoit and Samantha Fish to come and have a place to stop through in St. Louis. But, you know, just as important, it's a venue for my friends that I came up with in the scene, like Dave Cowles and Tony Campanella and Steve Picaro, mm-hmm. Kim Massey and Jeremiah Johnson and Tyler Stokes. You know, these are all my friends from way back, and some a lot closer than others, but, you know, we're all in it together. We all have played the same rooms. We keep the same hours. So to have a place for them to get treated good and look good on stage and sound good, You know, we all love and respect Soulard. It is so historical and a beautiful birthing place of so many blues artists of from our community. Mm-hmm. But to be able to, you know, go into the other county, to go into St. Charles County and definitely play in a sweet joint is it's good for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
this wasn't like go do something corporate, you know, sure, now that your name's a bit bigger. It was, this is like one of those rare things where this is corporate America actually doing something good for the arts.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you know, but I want my say in it. I do, you know, I do have a big say in who comes mm-hmm. through to play, and how it's marketed and how it's handled, how the bands are treated, what, you know. So it's a really great co-op. It's gone great. The people there are classy. People there are sweet. And I'm happy that it's happening in the hometown.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's great, man. Yeah, I love, you know, that it's just another opportunity, like you're saying, for people to, for these guys to play. And that's, you know, it's for me, it's great that I still drive down to, you know, Beale and
sure,
and Oyster Bar.
Oh, I still go to Soulard all the time.
Yeah, so it's so it's not like, you know, you're cutting anybody out. It's just nice to have that another opportunity to catch somebody in town. And
you can't cut out what's cool.
Oh, sure,
you know, Soulard is the coolest part of St. Louis to me, and so it's an extension of that. You know, it's like, hey, you know, let's go hang in another part of town and mm-hmm. you know, and see these cats you know, get to play to, you know, 400 instead of 100, you know, on a big stage. You know, a lot of those places are smaller, and that's cool too, man. I love juke joints and small little beer rooms and stuff too. I think it's just another piece of the puzzle of a nice blues community. I think we really needed it.
Yeah, I think it's great. You mentioned Tony. He'll be a support for that show Friday, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tony and I go way back, like 20 years, man.
Yeah.
And for a time, he even played in Honey Tribe. I mean, it wasn't for very long. It was right around when I disbanded it, you know, because my son was just born and stuff, but. Yeah. And I love Tony. He's a smoking, you know, without saying player. But for those who haven't heard him, that's the closest you're going to hear to Stevie Ray Vaughan on this planet. And that doesn't mean to say that he's a clone or nothing like that. But he can attack that style like no one you've ever seen, and certainly has his own feel and phrasing and attack and everything else too. He's a very talented cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had Tony on the show. Me, him, and Nick sat outside of Charlac Pub one night and recorded it. And
hell yeah.
It was a good time.
Good.
And he mentioned Tyler. Tyler's been on the show. We sat in his basement and recorded and talked blues and things. It's I'm trying to do my best to support my blues community.
You're
and,
doing it. And, that's all you got to do. Yeah. You know, it's just pitch in, hang a poster.
For sure.
You know, record an interview, get out there, spread the word. Our community is a sacred one, man, and it's growing, man.
Yeah.
It's really growing.
It's exciting to see just the whole St. Louis music scene as a whole, like, is coming together. There's a, you know, I'm a lot into the rock scene with more alternative rock stuff, and then and it's just fun to see people actually starting to work together and create something good for the community instead of trying to always work against each other. You know, people, for a while there, it seemed like everybody was like butting heads, like, you know, everything was a competition and stuff. And it's like, it's nice to see people are, you know, doing guest spots on each other's albums and doing stuff to just to create great shows and have fun with it and stuff. So it's
there's strength in numbers, man. Yeah. You know, when I was coming up in the St. Louis rock scene in the 90s, it was competitive. You wanted better numbers, you know, attendance at Kennedy's than the other band. But we always found ways to do, like, little festival shows where everybody got to play, or sit-ins, or, you know, jams, or we'd go and write tunes together. So I think a friendly competitive edge is important. It keeps everybody working. It keeps that work ethic up.
Yeah.
But you can't ever let it overshadow or eclipse the fact that you're all trying for the same thing.
Sure. Yeah.
So you really are all on the same team. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I hope, you know, I'm on tour most of the year, so I don't get to really see what happens on the STL scene as I used to have my finger right on the pulse of it.
Sure.
But it's nice to know there's some solidarity there and
some
togetherness.
You mentioned it. I wrote down in my notes there. I I don't remember, a while back, but I stumbled upon a video on YouTube of the Dark Horses in 1993 playing on the landing.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
Yeah, so there's a video of some of your old rock days in the down there.
That's a trip. Yeah, yeah. We started the Dark Horses in 92 and we played our first show at Bernard's Pub on the landing. It was 1992. I'll never forget it. They weren't doing music on Wednesday nights, and I begged him. I said, "Give us every Wednesday in like October, and we'll promote it, and we'll do what we can." And I went down there for the first one, and I remember because I paid $5 to park, and then one person came through the door to watch the show and paid the cover of $2 or $3. But anyway, I was like negative two or $3, like for the gig, like right. You know. And but it was a start, and I think the next night we had like five people. And you know, after about 2 or 3 years, the Dark Horses was packing Kennedy's and opening shows for people at Mississippi Nights, and you know, within a year from that, we were opening for the Scorpions at Riverport, opening for ZZ Top, playing to 20,000 people. Yeah. Played American Theater. We played the Horde Festival. We did a lot of work. We moved to Los Angeles for about 3 months, I believe it was, over a summer. We had every record label come out and see us. And we had Elektra Records tell us, "We're going to sign you."
Yeah.
And when we got back home and the dust kind of settled and management company called the label and said, "Well, where's the contract?" You know, and they go, "Who are you?" And like that really, you know, it was so many years of pushing so hard,
right,
and doing everything ourselves that kind of just the wind was out of our sails and the band, you know, kind of dissipated from there.
Yeah.
But Honey Tribe was born out of that. So for everything that kind of, you know, the old, you know, when one door shuts, another one opens, that's truly what happened there. You know, I was sitting around at home. I was really bummed out. It was like I lost my family. And Dave Cowles called me up. He said, "Man, well, what are you going to do? We should start a band." And I'm like, "Whoa, bro, like it's been a week or what?" He goes, "No, man, George Pazzo is a killer bass player. Like me, let's go. Come on, don't sit around." And I was like, "You know what? He's right. If I try it and it doesn't click, okay, at least I tried it."
Mm-hmm.
And I got off my ass when we started Honey Tribe, and we loved it. And
yeah,
and that was a band for a long time, too.
Speaking of George, there was another video I found on YouTube. I guess it was right. I interviewed Jimmy Griffin on the show, and I went back and I found a King of the Hill music video,
right,
with Jimmy, George, and Frankie, and their big hair and their stuff, and it was a lot of fun. It was like, because that's, you know, that was all before my time, so it was exciting to kind of go back and,
sure,
and you know, see some of that stuff that I missed. And but yeah, it was it's a good time to. It's nice that YouTube preserves all that stuff for us.
It's nice in most cases.
Yeah, right.
In most cases, it's nice. But yeah, no, I know what you mean, man. It's interesting to look back and you know, and kind of look back in time.
Sure. Yeah. I guess that's probably where we first officially met. I think the first time we met was at one of the last Honey Tribe shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was up in like Clarkson or Clarksville or whatever, something like that up there. It was like, I don't know, some kind of outdoor festival thing they mm-hmm. had going on, and you guys played. I remember it was like the last one or second to last kind of thing. It was somewhere in there.
Right.
But yeah, I met you guys and hung out for a bit and talked a little bit. And but yeah, before that, I was listening to Honey Tribe Records, Space Age Blues and Torch and stuff, and
right on.
And it was exciting to finally get to see you guys live, and
right on.
And then of course it's been cool ever since then, man. I've seen you know doing this doing the solo stuff, and then the Brotherhood shows,
right,
and just following you guys around, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks,
enjoy,
man.
Coming to watch you guys play. You got a real great band right now, and the Bobby Schneck and Anthony, and it's just a lot of fun to watch you guys play.
Yeah, man, it's you know, it really did kind of fall together. Steve Durst, my bassist,
yeah,
first first played with me in England, I had a tour. I had a European tour that I used to do like 3 weeks mainland Europe, and then I would finish with a week in England. And I was using Pedro Arevalo from Dickie Betts Band on bass. And he hit me and said, man, I got to go out with Dickie. I can't do the final bit in England. And I said, okay. I mean, he goes, well, I got you covered. I got this kid. And I'm like, oh, great, kid. And he goes, dude, he knows every lick of the set already. I'm like, you shitting me? And he's like, no, man. He's like, and I'm like, well, Pedro, I trust you, you know. So Steve Durst hops on a plane, gets his passport, flies into London, does the week, no rehearsal, you know, went over some sticky stuff like in the sound check, but and he killed it, man. So I always kept him in mind, yeah. You know. You know, Bobby Schneck came out with me as a tech first. This drummer I had hired for like not even that long said, man, can I bring my friend Bobby? Oh, he'll do some driving and help out and just pay for his food. He just wants to go on tour. And I was like, well, we'll give him a little something. I mean, bring him out if he's trustworthy and cool, you know. So he come out and he's just awesome guy, mm-hmm. You know, just solid and trustworthy and real and genuine. And then I heard him play guitar and that was like this whole other thing. So you know, he eventually, I recommended him to be the tour manager for Royal Southern Brotherhood. Now, here's a bunch of cats in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they got a 23-year-old tour manager that's like, you know, this is Bob's, everybody knows Bobby. Yeah. You know, he's a little guy, yeah. You know, and it's like, you know, he's ruling us, you know, coast to coast, you know, getting us from A to B, and he did a great job, And I kept hearing him play and his play develop and just get better and better. He's a monster now.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful to have him in the band. And, you know, I know that he'll go on in the future to do his own things and bigger and better things. And he's badass. And Anthony, I actually managed some of his older bands and produced their records, like, back in the day. So we've been knowing each other, you know, going on 2 decades, too. Mm-hmm. And I kind of always told him, I said, man, one of these days I'll step away and do more of a song-based solo band that's a different dynamic than Honey Tribe was and is, you know, I was saying at the time. And when I do that, I'm going to call on you. And I'll never forget the day I called him. I said, hey, remember when he was like, dude, that was like 10 years ago you said that. And I go, today's the day.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. and we put the band together. And, man, it's... I think it shocks people that I have these cats that are, you know, in their 20s. I mean, Anthony's in his 30s, but, you know, Steve and Bob are in their 20s, and they just kill it. You know, they don't play the instrument, they play the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very lucky. I really love all of them. And since I did break away from Royal Southern Brotherhood in April, you know, now we're 6-7 months into this band, and now it's really starting to gel. Yeah. You know, it took going out there and really hitting it.
Yeah, I love that you know these guys that you know you've been loyal to these guys. Like you, the last time I saw you at Ameristar, you had Catfish Willie, who you said you've known for.
He was the guitar player on the Dark Horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you brought Tyler up, who has been.
I produced his record.
Yeah, by your side and. Everything. So it's just fun to see that, you know, you keep the same circle of guys, you know, Tony, you said too, and like you keep these guys around and it's nice to see that there's that going on.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I think you help out your fellow cat, you know, you get him a little extra recognition or you know, you write a song with him or you produce his record. You know, Jeremiah Johnson came to my attention and I've known him for years.
Yeah.
And I heard his records, and I was just like, man, need something.
Sure.
Like, he's killing. Like, I went down to watch the show just to see, just as a spectator, you know?
Yeah.
Killing voice, killing guitars.
Yeah, man.
But I'd heard those records, and I was like, he just needs somebody to push him, you know, in a good way.
Sure.
Like, man, you could play that meaner, or man, you could play that sweeter. Just somebody outside his own head. And we went and made a record down in Memphis. I'm really proud of it. It went to the top 10 of the Billboard Blues charts. And, you know, I'm still pretty new as a producer, but I've been lucky enough to work with some talent. And and kind of help them get to that next rung on the ladder, you know. And I want to do that for the rest of my days. That's what it's about, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna Tyler Delta Soul Revival record just came out a couple weeks ago, and
yep,
I did a little some music record shop down on Manchester, sponsors the show now,
mm-hmm.
And they reached out and they said, hey, would you want to, you know, start booking some shows here, do some kind of showcase. They do a lot of in stores on Saturdays, Sundays, and
right.
And so the first one I did was October 3rd, and I called on Tyler and Delta Soul Revival,
right,
and Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals to come in and play, and we did a
cool,
fun little in store there, and yeah, it's just he's one of those guys I just love watching him play, and
yeah,
he's it's, you know, it's not, to know that he's like as young as he is and he's just getting going, it's exciting to watch, and
oh, yeah, yeah.
What's going to happen there.
He's got a really bright future. Yeah. You know, the thing a lot of people don't realize about Tyler Stokes, you know, is that when Honey Tribe was in my basement rehearsing the band, getting it ready for the road, getting it ready for the stage, you know, this 10-year-old kid used to pop over and, can I watch? You know, like, yeah, man, of course you can watch. And that was Tyler.
Yeah.
So he was brought up watching Honey Tribe birth itself and evolve, and then he picked up a guitar, and I gave him a couple guitars too, and
yeah,
he got really crazy good pretty quickly.
Right.
So by the time he's like 16, 17, he starts bringing me over songs and stuff, and I'm like, man, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
By the time he was like 19, he brought me over some songs, and I'm like, can I cover one of these on my record?
Yeah.
And I put one of his songs on Turquoise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he had a co-write
right
on an international record before he could drink a beer.
Yeah. That's
impressive.
Yeah.
And so finally I said, man, just keep coming with these songs. And he finally brought a whole batch that were like stellar, and took him down to Memphis, got Yonrico Scott, you know. We made an EP. We made 5 songs, and we're going to go back whenever my schedule opens up in the spring, and we're going to do a full length record on him. And man, he's going to do some stuff.
Yeah,
he's a monster.
Sure. Yeah, he's been hitting it last couple weeks or whatever. Been touring the Midwest, and it's exciting to see that he's you know, branching out a little more and stuff. So more people are going to start recognizing the name.
Yeah, man. It's all about getting out there,
sure.
and no one will work as hard on it as you will. So mm-hmm. Make the calls and do the deal, and
yeah,
go play for nothing and go play for nobody and do it a lot, and then people start coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he told me, talked a little bit of, you know, we got his perspective on that same story on the show. So it's if you haven't checked out Tyler and you're listening to this, go find that episode on my website and listen to Tyler's take on coming up with Devin there and Honey Tribe. And,
yeah, man.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I was gonna. So you, there was a couple other things I wanted to talk about. There was your Jam in the Van video session. You ever? How cool was that?
The Jam in the Van. Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That was like in New Orleans, and we tried to set up a couple times and it fell through, and then. Finally I got down there, and man, it was cool. The guys were cool and did a few tunes I kind of don't normally do.
Yeah.
I hadn't played that way in so long. I used to play solo acoustic 4 nights a week,
mm-hmm.
for years. And now, I mean, I have a band. I don't do that. Like,
yeah.
Why? You know what I mean? So it was cool. It was a good time.
Yeah, that's I don't remember exactly how it all came about, but they had somebody on and I stumbled upon that series, and I was just like, man, this is a really cool idea, you know, just the fact that essentially a, you know, mobile studio in a van, you
totally.
Know, and like
and they go all over the country, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah, they go to a lot of different festivals and they'll show up and people just jam in the van, and it's cool.
Yeah.
It's a neat idea. So I really like it a lot, and it's a sort of like what I kind of what I'm trying to do with the show too. Like, I try to be mobile to where I can set up anywhere and
yeah.
and, you know, knock out an episode and stuff, and it's kind of fun to just you know, have that live element to it.
Hell yeah!
So Ragged and Dirty came out last year. I love that record, man.
Thank you very much.
Just I love there's like a just real cool roots rock and blues, and you mix it all very well throughout their album. That Back to You is like one that really hits for me.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful song, and but yeah, so we looking to put out you got some new tunes coming soon, or
yeah. My thing has been since Royal. Well, actually, since the Honey Tribe days, you know, the first record came out 10 years ago, Torch.
Yeah.
And it took me 4 years to do a follow-up. And I kind of didn't know where to go, you know. And I was touring so hard, nonstop. I don't know, man. I couldn't find time to write. When I would write, it would just be like total just writer's block and all that. And, right. You know, finally I put out Space Age Blues. And then I got my confidence back, and you know, hell, from the time of Space Age Blues in 2010 to right now in 2015, I put out 6 records. So that's more than one a year, you know. And I started realizing, like, man, I want to do like my heroes did and put one out every year, you know, or at least every 18 months. So I was really hoping to get one out by the end of this year, but. You know, I'm touring hard again. I'm recently engaged. My son's 15, so like those last couple years are kind of slipping away until, you know, adulthood there.
Yeah.
So it's been a little tough, but I go into the studio February 1st for 9 or 10 days with Tom Hambridge again, the producer from Ragged and Dirty.
Yeah.
The studio's called, the studio's called Welcome to 1979. Everything in that studio is pre-1979.
Yeah.
So we're going to cut to 2-inch tape, like all my heroes did.
Yeah.
All the gear, all the mics, everything is pre-1979. So we're going to get a real vintage sounding record. We're going to mix it down to 1/2-inch tape. You're going to be able to play it on vinyl. So you're going to actually be able to hear a record that never touched digital once.
Yeah.
Now, people are going to buy it on iTunes. They're going to buy a CD. That's fine. But for those vinyl lovers out there, they're going to actually get an analog all through every step of the process.
Yeah.
Recording.
That's killer, man.
So it'll be juicy and fat, and it'll be cool. And you know, as far as the direction, I'll just say that it's not Ragged and Dirty, but it should appeal to my fans. And there's some, you know, some different territory to explore.
Yeah. I love that. Like you know, it doesn't always have to be the same. I mean, it's all still, you know, Devin Allman, but like Turquoise is very different than Ragged and Dirty.
Totally.
You know, and it's like, so it's fun to have a very different vibes on each record and
I agree.
It still be the same sound. You know, it's like,
I don't ever want to churn out the same records.
Right.
I just don't.
Yeah.
Like, I have no interest, you know, and if I was, you know, to be honest, if I was a movie director, you know, I would model myself after the type of director that would take on, you know, a period piece, and then a dramedy, and then a, you know, a biopic, and then, like, I would jump across the board.
Definitely.
Because I think that your central style is the core. It's the linear thing that ties it all together. You know, your shot sequence or your angles or your lighting, you know, those are all the same moods and vibes, just done in a different context, you know, a different center point, a different focal point. So a record is still going to be my way of singing, my way of playing guitar, my way of this, my way of that, but I like to serve it up different every time. Like, you know, you got to keep it fresh, man.
Yeah.
I want some people to go like, whoa, all right.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. I think there is that. As the fan, there's, you know, they're so attached to, like, say Ragged and Dirty, you know.
Right.
And then, like, you put out the new sound, and they're like, well, you know, I like the old stuff better or whatever. It's always,
sure,
it's always gonna be that.
Always.
And it's like, but, and it's like, oh, this is, you know, oh, I don't like this. But then once, like, usually the second play or third or whatever, sometimes it takes, that finally grows on you enough to where, like, it all makes sense, and you're like, oh, I get it now, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, the people are, you know, especially when you're listening to an album over a year or whatever, multiple years, and you,
sure,
you become become part of you, and so people aren't always welcome to change. But I think once they step back and they look at it, it's right. like they're so glad it happened because.
Yeah, well, I mean, you fall in love with one, and yeah. you know, oh man, well, this one ain't that one,
yeah.
and then you're right, it takes a while, you know. It's like. You can't pick your favorite child, like, you
right.
know,
yeah.
you're going to love them all for different reasons, you know.
Yeah, there's a band, the band's tuning up, the boys are getting ready to throw down, it sounds like, here in a little while, getting the guitars tuned up. I didn't meet Tom, but I saw him open for George Thorogood one night at the pageant.
Oh, Tom Hambridge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. He killed it. Like, it was so much fun. Like,
was he drumming or was he out in front?
He was out in front.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was killer.
Yeah, he's great, man.
Yeah.
He's a drummer. He's a front man. He's a producer. He's a Nashville songwriter, very respected. And a hell of a producer. I mean, that guy's got more tricks up his sleeve than he's just all around uber talented.
Yeah. It was cool to see him. And then, of course, you know, I remember the name and then when he's on your record and stuff, like, I was like, that's really that's fun to put all the pieces together kind of thing, you know.
I was lucky to snag him, you know, for sure. And we've done like some of those cruises together, and he'll get up and play like Midnight Lake Michigan with us, and you know, he's just very very gracious, and he's a mentor to me for sure. Like, I want to move into my older age and play in the summer and play all the festivals, but in the winter I want to go back with my wife and just produce bands in a home studio and be more of a Tom Hambridge type cat than like a out there beasting the road. You know, we play 30 countries right now. We play 250 or 60 shows a year, and it's awesome. I love it. I'm not complaining. But as I get older, I miss home more. You know, I want to be home, and so, you know, I'd like to see, you know, play all the warm months, like May through October, you know, do festivals all over the world, and then when it's cold, just hunker down in the studio and make records for young and upcoming artists, you know?
Yeah. That George Thorogood show, I was hoping he would pull out Back to Wentzville.
Oh, okay.
But he never did. I was like, man, if I got an opportunity to see him live, I would love to hear that song, especially
sure.
since growing up in Wentzville.
Yeah.
I live on Highway Z when he says cruising Highway Z in my Coupe de Ville, and I'm like, man, that's, you know,
right.
that's cool. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Let alone most people don't even know where Wentzville's at, but the fact that there's a song about it, like, you know.
Right, right.
But you were telling some of that story the last time I saw you at Ameristar about living in Wentzville and working at Burger King.
Yes.
Way back in the day. What high school did you go to?
That is the most quintessential St. Louis question you just
yes.
asked me.
Yeah.
I went to Wentzville High, and it was fun, man. I lived out in Lake St. Louis, and, you know, we would go out on the lake in the boat, and we had a good time at that place, man, you know. But I was damn sure ready to get the hell out, and I've split and went on tour with the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I was only there for a little over a year. But good memories, good times, some great friends back then. And, yeah, man.
I went to Wentzville Holt in 99.
So oh, okay.
I went to the
nice.
same school for a bit there.
Yeah, same school. Nice.
And then they opened up Timberland across the way on the South Campus, and that's where I graduated.
Oh, okay.
Over there.
Nice.
So yeah, I was only the 1 year actually at Holt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I was just that's another thing that kind of I feel like a connection with you and stuff too, is that the fact that we're from
hell yeah.
the same town and stuff and all that. It's cool to see the success and things. But
well, I appreciate that, man. You know, it's been awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've kind of come a long way since playing some crappy riffs in my bedroom in Lake St. Louis for my friends, them rolling their eyes. Really, really got to do a lot and really hope to do a lot more, you know, in the next chapter. And
yeah.
always keep St. Louis close to my heart. You know, I'm originally from South Texas, born and raised. But in my late teen years, I got transferred to St. Louis because my stepdad at the time got a gig flying for TWA. And so that's how we landed. And man, it's been an awesome run. It's been a great second home. Got so many friends here and family, and still live here and will live here until my son graduates. And then it's time to get back to the beach. I grew up by the beach. But I'll always come back, you know. It's just it's home, you know.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, man, I thank you so much for taking some time out to do this. Come out, see Devin Friday the 13th at Ameristar Blue or Bottleneck Blues Bar.
Yep.
And put a couple songs on if you want. What are you feeling? What do you want to promote?
Let's do a couple. Let's do Midnight Lake, Michigan, which is like a almost 10-minute improv instrumental, kind of a spooky blues instrumental.
Killer tune, yeah.
Proud of that one. And then let's do a cover. Let's do I'll Be Around, old Spinners, R&B classic.
Yeah, I love that take on that song too.
Thank you very much, man.
Great cut on that record.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. All right. So see Devin 13th. Pick up some music at a show or iTunes, Amazon. Pick up the vinyls. Get a Devin Allman Turquoise and Ragged and Dirty on vinyl. They're great. So
thank you so much for having me. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Shane.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.